to take an intro.
Well, why don't you get your favorite hanging on there? How about this one? You like this one?
Oh, yeah, that one's pretty.
That's pretty right there. Now, come here, let me show you something. I like the Blue Balls.
Nueve. Blue Balls NYCFC. Season 9.
I like the Blue Balls. The Blue Balls.
Nueve.
Blue Balls.
Season 9. Nueve.
Like! Bullet points in Poseidon's weekly download meeting. Ladies and gentlemen, you've got Blue Balls, Neptune, the god of the sea, and horses, and olive trees. My name is Jake Beckard, and I'm your intrepid cohort, and I am here joined, as every week, by my intrepid cohort, Mr. Trey Fillmore. Trey, how are you this week?
I'm fine. How are you? It's hot. What else is there to say?
It is hot every single day. The heat, it heateth every day. How are you staying cool?
Luckily, this microphone allows me to have a fan in the room. Unless I listen back tonight and it's just you only hear a fan, that would be depressing. But the other way I stay cool is I don't. I like the heat. Give me more heat, baby. Love it.
Yeah, you're this is your shit. I cannot stand it. I sleeping hot, hate it. Walking hot, hate it, big sweaty. I'll go all the way up the train to find the non-sweaty car if I can.
Yeah, the sweaty car is rough. If I have to do it, I'll do it. But I'm not, you know, it's not a avoid at all cost situation for me.
I think it's particularly, right, like, unpleasant because you think you're going to be fine and then you can just feel it. I mean, it's the sauna. It's literally the sauna.
Yeah.
You feel the sweat emerge from your pores. And instead of the feeling of like, I'm finally purifying myself, it's exactly the fucking opposite. I'm dirtying myself in a way that will make me completely unlovable to everybody that I see today.
Yeah, I do have to just cut bait and cut my hair. I have to get rid of it all. It's gone. You know, my body's been telling me for years now, just give up, dude. Stop holding on. And now in this heat, it's just more obvious than ever. It is
really.
It's a scary feeling when I'm washing my hair in the morning, and the sides are all nice and thick, and I feel it. And then I get to the top, and it's like angel hair pasta, like a small handful. It's the worst feel. It's just like I just gotta give up, and I'm okay with it now. I've made peace.
That's good. You've made peas and carrots.
For my angel hair pasta, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's nice. I think that's very encouraging. My buddy has a short film. David has a short film that he's like moving around places. It's called It's a Dog, and it's about his balding. And he's like, listen, like, you know, whether or not you want to admit it's a dog, like, everybody looks at the dog and knows it's a dog. You know, you can call it anything you want. You can style it in any particular way. But ultimately, that dude is going bald. I haven't explained the concept very well. but the film is good.
I'm like, who's the dog? You're calling him a dog?
No. I'm calling you dog. I'm calling you dog. Dog, I'm calling you right now to record our podcast. Oh, we're running late.
Let me pick up. Oh, I'm bald as fuck?
Ring, ring.
Oh, thank you.
Click.
Goodbye.
All right, bitch. Let's talk about something much less depressing.
Yeah.
Well, listen, we can start in a good place, right? I mean, we have not recorded since we earned our 3 points, since we snapped the streak, the winless streak that plagued us, the record-setting winless streak. Is it all changed, Trey? Have we reemerged and finally the 6 weeks of winter are over? Or is this just, more mid-season? I mean, we've got a ton to fucking talk about here.
Yeah,
on
we
the
do.
Micro, but on the macro, are things different? Have you sussed a change in NYCFC's trajectory, or are we still in the like crazy woods of mid-season 2023?
You know what? I think that these last three games, since we've last talked, are both perhaps. To answer your question, yes. It's perhaps the most positive era of this season thus far. The best stretch of performance we've seen. Things are coming together much better than they used to. Players are coming back from injury now. James Sands will be returning from the Gold Cup eventually. He's playing tonight. I forgot. And you know, it feels like, okay, this team can maybe make it in, like, hope. It's good that we did not lose hope, because there is still hope, right? On the flip side, what this streak also was not good in terms of results. Like, the results just remained the same. You know, yeah, we picked up the win, but we should have had 7 points out of the last three games, and we got 5. I mean, we could have had 9 points. We did win, in fact, win the Vancouver game, and that was the least winnable game that we played. And to have that be the experience and the outcome is...
You mean Montreal?
Montreal, sorry. Fucking Canada. Who gives a fuck?
Yeah, Canadians. They're all the same.
They're all the same. They all lose to USA in the Gold Cup. It's just difficult to, like, feel good about how much better the team has been when we dropped 4 points we should have had. Like, that sucks, especially if those 4 points would have had us in the playoffs right now. But what it really is that we're fucking 13th, you know? It's hard to feel good to come off that week and be at the bottom of this pack of teams. Because right now it's Miami, and Messi's coming, baby, and we can touch on it. Toronto, which is complete fall apart mode, and then everyone else, and we're at the bottom of it. We're the bottom of the still functioning teams, and that sucks after what we saw in the last 2 weeks. Like, I don't want to be a downer after this team has not lost in so long, and the vibes are good amongst the boys, and the performances are better, but to some extent, I don't feel great.
But that's a remarkably, like, backwards-looking way of taking it. I mean, I guess we haven't taken stock in that way, right? Like, we haven't gone back and said, we're in a pickle in terms of our standing, because we've just been waiting for the thing to be over. And now we have time to look back and say, okay, that really fucking cost us. But it's hard to...
Sure.
The reason we keep on looking for the turn is because the turn is, like, the turn is when the season starts. The turn is when, if things just kept a pace, like, okay, eventually we just fall out of contention, and it's a bummer, and we give up on the season, and we look forward to next time, and watch Cushing, you know, get the boot, and all those things. Now the season begins. Is it stressful? Certainly. But is it a challenge, right? Like, if all of this, the shakeups, the hot stoves, the acquisitions, can they turn into a winning season for this team? I think that's we've set ourselves up a long way to go, but it's not an impossible climb. And the turn means it's not just not impossible, but, like, there's an entirely new vantage point on it. Potentially. Certainly no guarantee. But let's go back to the Montreal match. It's the furthest away from what we've done, and it's also the one that I regret the most not being able to report on, because, of course, you're right. We did snap the streak, and we did it in unwinnable conditions. How? What did the team manage to do or to hold down about Montreal that allowed this to happen?
Firstly, I think that the team, that was the best, after coming from the Portland match, like, that was the best defensive performance that we've had. You know, Montreal had not been scored on. This is not defensive, but it was the first thing that came to my head. They had not been scored on in, like, 2.5 months at home. They have not been scored on in 4 games at home until we got there. They had not lost at home for 2.5 months. And the key to doing that on the road is solid defensive play. And building on Portland, you have Chanot after getting a full run out in Portland, and Tavon and Justin building on the performances that they had had previously. And in that match, I think it's where it clicked the most, because we were able to maintain possession. And Tavon and Justin did this interesting thing where they would kind of take turns adding a body into the midfield, right? Like, this is a big conversation, and we'll probably touch on it here and there, but, like, this team has reverted back to three in the back ever since Thiago Martins got hurt and then Cheneau had his international break. And ever since then, the team has looked more and more comfortable. But the problem is you sacrifice one attacking body. It's just you're going to. You can say, oh, we have the wing backs are now moving further up the field and that will help us attacking. Yeah, sure. But the middle of the field is still anemic if you can't, you know, add another six in there or add another midfielder. This will be in a hugely important conversation when we talk about the signing we just made. So to have Justin and Tavon in this Montreal match where Georgi Mihailovic was not there, so they did not have kind of the front third anchor that they were expecting to have and depend on for most of their games, we could move up to the level of a Wanyama and move into their territory and be a little bit more comfortable taking some more of those possession-based risks. And it was good to see that. And I think Tavon has built on that too. Like, knowing where his space is now on the field is so nice to see Tavon starting to embrace that. Like, it's almost like a defensive half space. Like, teams, especially in Charlotte, you'll see, like, teams are giving him that space when he has the ball. And it becomes, like, him just saying, do I have a window to pass it to GP? And if not, I'll give it back to Cheneau and we'll recycle. And, like, giving a player like him in a new position that choice, so simple, you're reducing his defensive responsibility because you have two other center backs. You're reducing his offensive capabilities to, outside of being up and down the wing as a right back in a back four, to, you know, take it up the midfield and see what you got. And if you got nothing, recycle it back. Like, that simplification has been so big for him and for the team in terms of just having some sort of stable base. And of course, that it's mirrored by Justin Hack, especially the Montreal game was the most kind of balanced possession kind of game that I think we had, even though it was like perhaps the most anemic offensively. I think that was to be expected against a good Montreal team that was not going to allow us too many opportunities.
Now, do you see that as having been like a well-executed strategy or a condition that we had to accept in order to stay, just in order to play a game that we could win?
Yeah, I think it was 100% intentional. I think that game, like, I think the screws were tightening and it's like, find a way to just, like, not let the game get out of control. And if we can find a space, we'll take it. And we did. I'm trying to fucking pull up the game. I haven't even looked at it. Where are we? New York City FC. Next question. No, I think it was purposeful.
Justin Hack.
Yeah, totally. And that was the Pellegrini scissor, right?
Yep.
Okay. Sometimes that's all it takes. Stroke of luck, you know? He stepped up. Took a risk.
It's not a particularly fun version of watching this team play soccer, but it is a version that, I mean, you know, it looked like... Was this team the most aggressive it possibly could have been? No, but it was a team that had the aim of winning, you know, and holding on to that point.
Yeah, I mean, you could tell it had the aim of winning because we were up 1-0 and subbed in Siegel, and that was like the first time we've done that in a while.
Yes, exactly.
And once it seemed like it was about that time, like we kind of gave Siegel and Richie like 5 to 10 minutes to be like, let's see if we can steal another one. But it became clear that Montreal like sensed, you know, they're the home team, they're the better team, and they wanted to win or at least fucking get a point, you know? And you could sense kind of an overwhelming control that they started to take in the last 20 minutes of that match. And I think that's when, you know, it became put Turnbull in, put Benal Khazar's debut, you know, get some bodies out there to just hold down the fort. And it got a little scary there at times, but they made it through.
So then, I mean, was it just so idiosyncratic? Is that why we haven't been able to replicate it in the last two matches? Or are those matches also in their own way idiosyncratic. I mean, like, what brought us back to a 1-point draw against Charlotte?
I think things started to gel together more. I think that there was, I think Montreal was a little more difficult to penetrate through. Again, that was Magno at the nine, of course. And it just was a little more difficult to get things going in their half in that match. And we were being idiosyncratic in the approach of, like, you know, bait and switch, try to steal a point away. Then you have Charlotte. I know that Magno kind of played it as a nine, but you're at home, you're in the groove, you know, the team has been looking better, and I think Charlotte was an opportunity where Charlotte is, you know, certainly not as good as Montreal, but has been wrecked by certain international call-ups and injuries. They still had a strong version of their team out there, but you get at home, and then I think it was just a game where the key to the Charlotte game for me was it was Richie Ledesma being finally displaying a level of comfortability in NYCFC that allowed for the creativity that we know he has to demonstrate itself. I mean, he really was a great connecting piece moving back to front in this match. And that's what that it was. It was the first time in a very long time, and it was similar to the Dallas game where it's like things are cooking back to front. Like, this team is able at Citi Field somehow to find transitions easily and more fluidly, and like the depth of the attack is much more. The angles are much deeper. The ability to ping balls forward is a lot more effortless when we're at Citi Field, and when, you know, that was the third game with Hack and Chanot and Gray. And that was perhaps Gray and Hack's, you know, most shaky performance, at least in terms of like some mistakes that led to some opportunities. It's certainly Justin Hack's, but they still, like, the team was used to playing in the system for so long now and with those guys for so long now. And Richie is finally a lot more comfortable. And that was really impressive. And to do it, like, you know, you have the up and down performances of Pellegrini. He got the start in this game because Santi Rodriguez was suspended. And I believe GP was injured. He came on late in that match. I think that's the story there.
That makes sense.
So
yeah, I do not remember either.
Because he came off in the Portland game halfway through. So I think that it's it was really just a real moment of, I mean, look, that was a performance where we needed to just finish. Like, the ball was getting to Talas Magno constantly, and it wasn't happening. And, like, frankly, like, you asked if each game was idiosyncratic, and I don't think so. I think that the Charlotte game and the Columbus game were very similar. It was NYCFC, you know, when they had the ball, being able to dictate the pace of play. You know, Columbus had a lot of possession, and they're obviously they're the best attacking team in MLS. So, like, they have that ability and that confidence. And Charlotte, on the flip side, were able to take the ball away when they scored early in the 20th around there. So they were able to change the game and be a lot more defensive. And it was like,
let's talk about that. Let's talk about that goal, because yes,
sorry, I'm
of
all
course,
over
right,
the place.
Once you've got
I
it
apologize.
Under your belt, you can play that. No. We're popcorning, because trust me, we got this is gonna be with a lot of stuff in this episode, but it's not gonna be a long one, my friends.
Okay.
But I want to talk about that goal specifically because I think it's a good thing to point to. You know, you can look at, there are three young guys who seem like they bear the you can assign responsibility to one or multiple of them. And it speaks to me to something that's potentially unfixable about NYCFC, right? Like, which is to say, a certain amount of inexperience or a certain amount of, like, the foibles of having a young team. Whether you call it Tavon Gray's fault, whether you call it Justin Hack's fault, or whether you call it Barraza's fault, this is a situation where you have players like making one dumb mistake or several dumb, like, you know, simultaneous mistakes, a lack of defensive coordination or assumed defensive coordination that then just becomes, right, like it becomes the game-changing goal, not just because of what it does on the scoreboard, but what it does off the scoreboard and what it enables Charlotte to do. Do you hold any of those guys responsible, and is there anything you imagine as a way to counter that?
In a vacuum, of course. Like, they're, I think all three of them take a certain measure of responsibility for that goal. I think if you ask them, they'd feel the same way. In terms of, like, hey, man, that was coming. Like, we have been playing two center backs out of position that are both either 21 or under. Like, these are guys who are not old and have not played in these positions. So you are destined to get plays like that, and I'm shocked we had not had more goals given up that were identical or similar, right? Like,
totally.
Justin Hax is just a bad clearance. Like, he just had a bad clearance, and it's that mentality you get as a center back that becomes automatic, where, you know, just to place that in time kind of contextualizes the mistakes. It was after 18 minutes of NYCFC just completely dominating the game and embarrassing Charlotte, and it could have been 2-3-0 by that point. Like, there was, we were on the front foot, and so these kind of flurries that Charlotte was getting into were more troublesome than, like, preparing against constant but sparse attack, because those flurries are when you need to turn it on and be aware and tell your body that these are life and death moments. And if the ball comes to you, you have to clear it with every ounce of your body, ounce of your being, and get it the fuck out of there. And same with Tavon Gray. I think he just reverted into this kind of comfortable space that he used to live in as a right back defender. And it just wasn't prepared because there was a lot of chaos happening. And likewise with Barraza, it's just like, after that much time off the ball, you can get a little zoned out. Now, he made some fucking amazing saves over the last three games. But moments like that are where you're like, okay. Look, Sean Johnson had some similar mistakes like this in the past. Like, just being a little too, like, when you see the ball cleared out, like, just trying to get the fuck out of your own goal because it's not comfortable to, like, be waiting and expecting for a shot when you want to not be in that position naturally. So, like, all these things kind of come from the fact that it was sprung on us and we had two very, very young center backs who just happened to make compounding mistakes. And look, I don't think the game falls on that either. Like, I know that it changed the game because, as I said, Charlotte became more defensive, more conservative. All the fucking time wasting they did, like, classic. It's so funny because whenever we play Charlotte, it is like playing against a mirror. Like, they're the most similar to us in terms of style, but in terms of mentality as well. Like, they know their coach well. They have Latanzio. They know that when they're up on the road with a subpar squad, I'm getting a cramp every 5 minutes if I can. And that's what they did. Mm-hmm. So I don't blame them. It sucks to watch, and it was boring. But NYCFC still created chances after that, plenty of chances. It was just the finishing. It's just not there on this team. Like, that's a longer conversation we will have. I don't know. At some point.
Oh, for sure. That's a talking points rollout.
Great. There needs to be a, yeah, now that we've made a striker signing and we're heading into League's Cup, there needs to be a post-mortem on the fucking dead body that is the finishing for this club. Because, like,
it's astonishing.
Is there anything in Charlotte, anything else? Who scored the goal?
Hack. No, sorry, not in Charlotte. That's for Columbus. Fucking.
Oh, Brian Kufre did. Yeah. Oh, and by the way, just want to say, called that shot, posted the receipts, of course, because this is a I think there's nothing else to say about the Charlotte game. I mean, we all remember.
No. But, trust me, we're jumping straight forward.
But just to put a pin, just to tie a bow on it, I fucking knew that that's how we were gonna score, and it was so obvious. It's. Having press box seats at a baseball stadium sucks dick. because you're so far away and you can't see or hear anything. And like all the little experiences you want to have and can report off of, you don't get. But you do get like a bird's eye view. And having that, it, like that first half constantly going down the left side was so easy. Just like butter. Like Kufre was finding himself in so much space. And I knew it was going to happen because before the match, I checked the starting 11 and I'm not going to lie, I don't keep tabs on Charlotte FC. Like, I'm not watching every one of their games. You know, I'll tune in here and there. But, you know, I know they picked up Bill Tuiloma. MLS vet, well-liked guy. He's known for being, you know, an undersized, powerful New Zealand center back. Like, rugby player in look and how he plays the game. He's very aggressive. He's also very athletic. Like, he had that spurt last year in Portland where he was scoring goals left and right, and it was, like, psychotic. How can a center back do this? And, I mean, he's a cool – you could do a whole podcast about him. He's a really interesting guy. He was, like, the crown jewel of New Zealand soccer and got found by Marseille, and obviously he ended up being an MLS lifer, so it didn't work out that way. But I saw him lined up at right back, and I go, oh, someone gave me this sheet. There's a typo on it. There's no way he's a right back. I had no idea that's how desperate they were in Charlotte for bodies. Like, they just didn't have a right back that can play, so they had Tuiloma out there. And watching the game, it was so obvious it was a center back playing right back. I mean, just he would always stay inside of the box when he was defending in space. And it's like he was never meeting Kufre at the ball. This would have been a fantastic game because anytime Talisch got the ball on the left side, he wasn't there. But of course, we kind of move around a lot up front when we need to. When Talisch did play on the left side, it was reminiscent of last year Talisch, where because Tuiloma was giving him so much space, he had it. So at halftime, I was like, if we fucking attack the left side, we're getting stuck in. We're not getting past Charlotte's bunker. If we could get on that left side, Kufre's going to have all the space in the world. And that's exactly what happened. Keaton Parks saw it. Keaton Parks, by the way, in that game, fucking amazing. That was perhaps one of his best games of the season. I mean, we can't say enough about him. He's been a superstar. And he continues to be. I think Paul was looking up his PFF stats and, like, pretty much all around, like, number two in terms of doing everything. After a performance like that, just put the Keaton Parks tape on the Charlotte game. If anyone ever, you know, tells you what can Keaton Parks do, show them the Charlotte game, because that's kind of he put it all out there in that match. That's all I had for
which
Charlotte.
Which leaves us, of course, with the Columbus Crew and plenty, at least, to grouse about here. I mean, not grouse for our sake, but like grouse about in terms of the state of the game, in terms of our inability, right? Like everything that you just talked about was on absolute display in this match, the good and the bad, but especially the bad, especially the issues around finishing. It's not the narrative of the match, though. Can we pause? Can we just get out of the way the discussion of the officiating?
Yeah.
So, okay, you know, everyone wants to know, how does NYCFC feel about this? Is that if the calls all went NYCFC's way, you know, are they willing to admit it? Blah, 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 blah. Yeah, but also, this was a messy fucking game. This was a nightmare. No wonder your coaches are out for two straight matches after this or whatever it is. This turned into a real clusterfuck, a sort of classic clusterfuck. Do you agree? Like, did it start right out for you, or was this, where did it start?
Yeah, Luis Peraza getting a time-wasting card in the 17th minute, I think, was indicative of where this match was going to go. I've never seen that before. That is insane to me. Like, how can you be accused of wasting time when there's 70 minutes left? You think he's going to sit and wait for 70 minutes? No. I don't think he was going to abuse it to that level. Like, go up to him, have a conversation, be like, dude, you're taking a little bit too long. Like, let's just speed it up just a little bit. I don't want to have to give you a card for this. That didn't happen. And he got a yellow, and it's ridiculous. And, like,
there was no conversation? He never got pulled aside in any other moment?
No. No, the referee just, like, standing at midfield, just waving his arm. Like, I'm sorry, but if you're going to give me a card, give me a little warning first, please. Like, I don't know. Mm-hmm. So that's to say, like, the officiating was embarrassing to a level of, like, calling everything and not calling the, he called everything small and didn't call any of the obvious fouls. Going both ways.
Mm-hmm.
But especially for Columbus, like, unfortunately, like, there was about three times I could count where they absolutely should have got the foul and it just didn't go their way. And then all the rest were maybe ticky-tacky, like, oh, they didn't get the foul and they whined about it. But, like, sorry, that's an MLS. Like, no one's going to get that foul. Yeah, three instances maybe. Yeah, really, really bad for them. Here's what I will say. Two things. Firstly, no team has been fucked by referees more in the last month than NYCFC, and I don't want to fucking hear about it. ever since, and I sincerely believe this, and this is not some joke conspiracy I have. I believe this is real. After Nick Cushing made his little rant after the Cincinnati game, we've been getting the fucking shit end of the stick for weeks. Every single game, there's shit that goes by that is made me literally stand up and walk out of the room. Every single game, it happens. And I'm sick of it. It's awful. Like, the refereeing in this league sucks, especially when it seems like it's, you know, purposeful in some direction. It's awful. That being said, Columbus fans, it should not be cover. Bad refereeing is not cover for embarrassing childish behavior by your coaches. Sorry, not yes. Say all these people like, when he came on the field, that should be a yellow. Sorry, dog. In the fucking IFAB rulebook, it's a sending off if a coach wanders onto the field. Like, he got what he asked for. And it was really
why
shitty.
Why do you think you don't see it happen more often?
Exactly. And he wasn't the only one. All the fucking players on the bench also went on the field. And then when the referee started reaching into his thing, they started pulling Nancy back. Like, no. You're not excused. You also did the bad shit. Don't do that. Don't walk on the field. After Alan Kelly, the devil himself, stole the Hudson River Derby from us in 2017. No, I'm still not letting that go.
No, naturally.
I'm sorry. No NYCFC players wandered onto the pitch. The fucking coach did not walk onto the pitch. These are things that don't normally happen, right? And so when it happens, you're going to get a card. And then he comes off and he fucking kicks the water bottles. Ooh, very dramatic. Very nice show, Nance. Whatever. And then the assistant purposefully and very clearly purposefully spraying the fourth official with a water bottle. I literally have never seen that before. That man should not. He gets a 3-game suspension. By the way, Nance also, the greatest thing, it was a real fuck you from Pro. He got fined for not leaving the field in a timely manner, which is a fine they give to players who take their time to time waste. Because a card isn't really good punishment for that because they're already leaving the game anyway. They can just take any more time they want. So they've been handing out these fines like to 3 or 4 players a week. I love that they gave it to a coach too. It's a real fuck you.
Definitely.
That assistant referee is much like the assistant referee in Philly who got in a shoving match with our player. It's not fucking professional wrestling. What are you doing? You're on a job spraying a referee with water bottle. You should be fucking embarrassed. What do you do? It's so stupid. It's so entitled. And just because the referee sucks doesn't mean you're allowed to behave that way. And that was seemed like some kind of understanding amongst Crew fans. Now, here is the thing about the refereeing is that when your coach, we know this from baseball, when you're in a bad position and you need anything to go right for you because nothing seems to be going right, what you do need is a coach getting thrown out to fire up your team. And the old trope worked in this case. It doesn't always work, but the second he got fucking thrown out, Columbus played like Columbus for the first time in that match, even though they were down a man after the red card, which was a red card, by the way. They completely flipped it. Like, this game, much like Charlotte, you know, as you said, we could have won that match. Our finishing was terrible. And now, look, in Charlotte, it was Talish who had the bad finishing. And Columbus, it was GP for who knows why. But
I know, our guy, our golden boy.
Well, the problem is players should be allowed to have bad games. But when the only player you have that can score goals Look at the other people that have been scoring goals. Justin Hack, Kufre, and Keaton Parks. Like, that's not who you want to be your goal scorers. I mean, it's great for them, and it's great that they can score goals out, you know, out of position, but when GP is not scoring, like, with this team we have right now, you're fucked. Like, we were going to be fucked if he had a bad game. I mean, anytime he has a bad game. So we were, and that's the case of this match. Sorry, I've been blabbering. What else you got?
No, I don't know. It's all the same. It's not all the same. It's it. Those are the two stories to me. It's the lack of finishing and then the lack of ability to take advantage of the man up. Right? This is the thing that we grouse about all the time. But, of course, it's like, it's just, it's so much more often that you see the sort of, momentum weirdly transfers back to the team that's down one man that it's almost not interesting to report on. If anything, it's, right, like, a red card is great, but it's certainly no excuse to take your foot off the gas. I guess the last question is, like, do you feel like all of that Michigas ultimately, like, that the game was stolen because you earned a bunch of extra time from being whiny pieces of shit?
No, I think...
And then score in the 95th minute.
No, I think that that game was stolen because we couldn't finish. Like, I can't blame Columbus or the referee or anything. Columbus has already... All the fans and the media there, they've all stuck to their guns that it's the referee's fault they lost that game. It's not true. They were the worst team.
Well, because they didn't lose.
Well, sorry. They did not win that game. It was the referee's fault they did not win that game. And it's not true. We were the better team. It's shocking to say. I know no one expected it, and we're not playing the prettiest soccer, but Columbus was god-awful in that match. I don't know why. I don't know how. They had their best players out there. I mean, a lot of it is defensive solidity. Justin Hack, Tavon Gray, Maxime Chanot playing well. Keaton Parks doing his thing. I had this whole bit in my head about Alfredo Morales, but it's not really worth the time. Just that he's the one risk taker on the team. Like, the Charlotte game, he took three shots from outside the box. Like, and that's why, like, young players don't think they have that green light. A lot of them are scared totally. They'll get benched. They want to do the right thing. They'll pass more often than shoot. Like, that's what I like about Alfredo. If any, like, one of the big things to admire about having him on the team, I know he's not, he is well beyond his salad days, and he's, you know, never going to get back to the ceiling he once had. But what he does do is, like, take risks. And usually they've bitten us in the ass in years past, but this year, not necessarily. Like, his risky tackles have been working out this year more so than last year. His risky passing, you know, it hasn't been as detrimental as it has in the past. And, like, the fact that he has a Travella assist for a goal this year is pretty fucking phenomenal. So, like, I admire the risk-taking, and I hope the younger players on this team can take a little bit more smarter risks, I would say. It's like,
yeah, absolutely. I think it's wise. Because it's not just that the risk will maybe, like, pay off for a goal. It also shakes up the rhythm of the game. And if you're not getting what you need, it can throw some things into disarray just to, like, it can wake people up to take the occasional risk. There's a strategic value to doing something that is not, like, by the books or particularly, like, oriented, or that is that's a wide shot but a surprising one, you know? And I think that's something that, like, people are afraid to coach young players because they'll go too far in the other direction. But there's value to it, particularly for this team right now. Trey, listen, we've got 10 minutes for talking points, and we got a lot to hit. Can we talk about them?
Yes, we can. Justin Hack, great job, buddy.
Yes. Oh, you're right. Well, we have to celebrate Justin Hack.
Yeah, he scored.
All things considered, has continued, I think, continued to be a really impressive force on this team and had a really good season. There's fuck-ups. There's always fuck-ups. Justin Hack, I'm thrilled to see Justin Hack operating the way that he does in this team.
Yeah,
and to crown it with this banger, with this first goal. Amazing.
I think it's kind of poetic that he was thrown in as a center back, you know, in the Eastern Conference Final last year. And, like, now he's evolved into someone that we can trust at that position. Trust is a strong word. Someone who has overperformed expectations immensely. And scored a goal. Like, got moved up and via some nice tactical work by Nick Cushing, and was that wrench that we talk about when we talk about risk-taking and surprising the opponent. Like, that's what Justin Hack making crazy, weird runs, playing midfield for the first time in months. And, like, it led to a goal. So, a fucking volley. And, by the way, Santi Rodriguez, fucking phenomenal on that play. I mean, I think he had some good performances recently, too. That's it. Whatever. Justin Hack, great job. It's great. It's good. He has confidence.
There's shit to learn. The momentum, frankly, the corner is being turned, Trey. I really believe this, and we are going to talk about why in Talking Points.
Talking points.
And that was the Talking Points theme song, as you well know, and these are the Talking Points. Trey, NYCFC has finally signed a striker, a potential legend for the side, someone whose ascendancy may be crowned by his time at NYCFC. Do you think Neymar can take us to the championship?
Great bit.
What was that? Great bit. Thanks. Hey, thanks. Thank you. That was so silly. What a silly time. People really bit on that. Hey, not like they did. I guess I didn't feel like everybody was doing it for fun, though. You know, like no one bought it, even the publications. But like everyone was like, "Well, what if? Haha, what if?"
Hey, Jake, I felt the same way. I'm not gonna say it's true, because that would be ridiculous. But I don't know how to say any of this.
What?
No, I mean, I saw that it was reported by some outlet, and I just, you know, can have strong feelings that one outlet that said it was correct when they said, perhaps.
So, that the offer had been made?
No, I don't think any offer necessarily has been made. Maybe, but I do know, you know, via other people's reporting, let's say that. That perhaps some people at CFG have perhaps spoken with Neymar.
Wow.
Perhaps.
Wow.
Actually,
stoking
this is a great,
the fire, Trey.
Great moment to bring up this fucking breaking news from 6 years ago that I found out this year that has never been reported. You want to hear it? It's fun.
Let's hear it.
It's very exciting. Actually, we're going to play a game, guessing game. 6 years ago.
Uh-oh.
Ish. Yeah, 6 years ago. Think of, so obviously we had a period of time where we had superstars on this team, Lampard, Pirlo, other people. And then, you know, obviously the transfer policy and roster construction of this team shifted heavily towards buying young talent, developing them, selling them. But there was one big name that we tried to get and didn't get. And it was 6 years ago at a position of need. Guess, make a wild, I'll give you three guesses, and after one guess, I'll give you the position, no, I'll give you the country, and after two guesses, I'll give you the position.
I'm not going to get it.
Just guess a big name in soccer, 6 years ago.
All right.
It's not fun if I play the game with myself.
I know. The timelines are impossible for me.
I know, it's weird. Trust me, when you hear this name, you'll be like, really?
My guess is Iniesta.
See, that's not a bad guess. It's not right, okay. But it's not a bad guess. We are we are in the right timeline level of star kind of place. Okay, next.
Okay.
Here's my hint for guess number two. It was an Italian.
It was an Italian. What's his name? Is it the American Italian?
No, Giuseppe Rossi. No.
Giuseppe Rossi.
Okay, final clue. Position of need 6 years ago was goalkeeper. It's the only one. It's Gigi Buffon. We actually reached out make that happen. There we go.
Oh, my God.
Count on Trey Fillmore breaking news from 6 years late.
When did we need a goalkeeper?
Well, when we got Sean Johnson, but right before we got Sean Johnson. Post.
Sure. The post Saunders period. Damn, and he turned us down. Who would have believed it? Trey, what about now? Okay,
so you're already teasing I said that just to say like that
Michigas.
I'm not teasing anything. I'm just saying it's not 100% false that NYCFC reached out to Neymar. It was more like a
some, these conversations happen.
Some
the
text,
club is a national, an international known entity. Talk about who's actually.
Okay.
Got
okay.
Signed.
Yes. Some texts were sent from one group of people to another group of people. It means almost nothing, but at least it is something. Okay. Let's talk about who signed. You go ahead. Take the floor.
Let's hit the main boy, right? Let's get to Mounsef.
Yes.
Mounsef Bakrar, a striker, an Algerian striker. With a rising talent, in many ways not a sure thing, right? This is not, we didn't sign Romelu Lukaku, folks. We got Bakrar, and so we're placing a bet. What's your reckoning on the odds of that bet, Trey?
Well, I would say this signing kind of, he was like plan B, right? The big name that we've wanted for a few months now is Matija Frigan from Croatia, from the same league, from the same club that we got Eber from. He's a hefty price tag, but I don't think the team's necessarily given up on it. But, you know, we have to get someone in, right? None of this fucking back and forth pish-posh. We had to get someone. And we have scouts in
That's
Croatia,
right.
Obviously, with Eber and whatever. So why not get... We're obviously limited by... We don't have any DP spots left. But we had two U22 spots open. And one... I think two roster spots open. Maybe one. So it's like, okay, if the best way to maximize this is to get a U22 striker from somewhere, from a at least respectable league that has had some level of production and shows a level of promise. And Bakrar is that. Obviously, the name is not well known or rolls off the tongue, but we're limited by what we could do. We're not going to bring in fucking Messi, okay? So bringing a striker like this, I think, is interesting on multiple levels. Like, plan B, fine. But still, we got him at a reasonable amount. I think it was like $2.3 million or something like that, U.S. dollars. We gazumped a Champions League team in Dinamo Zagreb, who they're having some problems financially, so we were able to gazump them. It's always good to gazump a Champions League team, because he was linked to them for a long time to be a backup striker for them. So like, that's at least shows that we're not plucking someone at random. Like, this is at least a gem that other top level teams were looking at. I find it interesting because, not the goals or the stats or anything like that, because he did not get a full-time opportunity at a starting role until like halfway through the season, and he was scoring goals at a good clip after that. So I'm not concerned about those numbers, frankly. I think it's interesting that, like, by the way, this is directly being stolen from Paul Harvey's most recent piece for The Outfield. You should read it. But the fact that we're kind of getting someone who's not a very CFG-level striker, he's not very, like, type of striker. He's not necessarily, he's not multi-tooled. He's not hold-up play. He's not going to work in combination with the other attacking players. Like, he hasn't shown a level of aptitude at those necessary skills. But, like, he's more of a take-the-top-off forward. He's a bunker ball kind of guy. He, like, a majority of his goals have been scored, and just non-goals, but shots, have been from making smart, fast runs behind lines. And, like, obviously, this was not about fitting the CFG style. This was about finding someone who fits desperately what we need. Someone to create verticality, and someone who can fucking score a goal. You know, someone who actually has a good conversion rate.
To.
He can score perhaps the most exciting thing with both feet. Our best goal scorer right now is GP, and he cannot score with both feet. This guy loves scoring with both feet. The runs he makes are amazing.
At the same time.
Yeah, he does. Who was that?
A little a flipper kick.
Yo, shout out Cuauhtemoc Blanco, MLS legend, who used to love to pull off his little trick. You should, if you don't know what I'm talking about, you should Google Blanco bounce. I'll send it to you after. It was made for MLS in 2006, and I fucking loved watching him play. Oh man, you've just derailed me.
Sorry.
The Paul Harvey's piece kind of comes from a conversation we were having before, where he was going through the data and he saw that our dribbling metrics are just like fucking tanked this season. Santi was a 96th percentile dribble value player last year, and Talish Magno was 60th percentile. This year, Santi's 4th percentile and Talish's 2nd percentile. Again, shocking nobody watching them play. But it coincides with, I was thinking about the pass maps that we've had in the past few games, or just this whole season. It's like a brick wall. It's like a bird crashing into a window. Like, just flat. Uh-oh. There's no sense of verticality. There's no sense of any kind of good spacing or runs being made. I mean, we had like 3 different players sitting on top of each other in the Columbus match at times. Just like no ability to shift the field other than horizontally, which we can do super well that we're playing 3 in the back. But with Bakar, you're getting a player who can make those runs in behind and who can get on the end of these plays. Like, if we are going to not be the best team in a match, he is the best guy to have because you can lob it up there and try to steal something. But also, like, all the opportunities we have created in the last 2 games, which have been our best 2 offensive games perhaps this whole season, barring 1 or 2 earlier on, certainly the best in the last 3 months, like, just having someone that can score a goal and the confidence in that is going to be huge. And like, I'm all for this signing. If we can get Friedgen too, fantastic. Like, that's A+, I apologize, David Lee kind of summer. But if we can just have this guy, like, this is the guy we wanted. This is what we've been asking for. And
it might just change the gravitational pull a little bit more towards the front.
Just in terms of profile and need and everything like that, 100%. I think
and
definitely.
And competition, for Christ's sake.
Definitely. Competition, great, because you bring someone in, now people are going to be fighting for more minutes.
But there's a signing that balances this as well, right? It hasn't been officially reported yet, but Birk Risa is maybe coming in at the center back position. How much research you done on Birk?
A little bit, because we tried to get him in the winter, and they said no. But now that he's on an expiring contract, so they're like, okay, fine, give us $1 million. And we did. So cool. Left-footed center back, which we haven't had. I think that's another feather in the Justin Hack cap, was that he was playing left center back in all these appearances without having a left foot. Like, that's hard. And it'll allow the very molasses-level kind of pace of our creativity coming out of the back, like, should be improved just by having someone who's comfortable playing that position. So we found another guy who's, like, in a position of need. If we do want to play 3 in the back and do it going forward, well, if you have Chanot, Martins, and Risa, 25-year-old Norwegian, so he's the age profile of someone you want to bring in who can, like, kind of stay for years if you want to. And also, at 25, he has, like, over 100 professional appearances. That's good. That's what you want in a center back. And he's, like, leggy. He's 6'2", 6'1", 6'2". He's got size. He can cut it in a physical league. Played for Molde, which is like a very storied team in Norway. It's not like the best team in the world, but they have experience playing good teams. It's not like he will be surprised by the level of talent he faces here. I think that's big. So, yeah, we'll talk more when it's official. I don't think there's even too much to say. Like, Tony Alfaro was the left center back signing we made. We knew that that was not good enough if we want to be a playoff-level team. Well, Tony's just got traded to the Galaxy for a nice chunk of change, by the way. And it opens up a...
Yeah, what, 500K or something like that?
Well, that's if performance incentives are reached. And I love Tony, but I don't see him, like, somehow now at this point, at age 30, like, becoming a starting-level center back in the league. I don't know. That's not mean. Like, that's just... I don't know. I don't know what the... details. No, I should have just said I don't know what the details are. It's $125,000 guaranteed GAM, which is more than I ever thought we'd get for him. So,
sure, absolutely. And then to be able to immediately replace him with somebody who might be able to upscale his performance. It's a good. It again, the momentum is in the right direction, Trey.
Yes.
But in the short term, yes. We've got something to do this weekend.
Oh, I can tell you have a timetable.
I can hear you. Yeah, I sure do. But I hear you had an extra point that you wanted to slip in, and so I also know how to circle on back.
Just Tony Alfaro, rest in peace. We really should do a rest in peace.
I know. We have to say a proper goodbye.
He played better than I thought he would, and he was super, not just like the nicest guy, just super kind, super good to the young players, and someone that could speak to the Spanish speakers, the Portuguese speakers, the English speakers. Like, he could do it all. And like kind of celebrates the best as like a Mexican immigrant growing up in America and like succeeding. And now he's in LA, which is where he, you know, grew up, spent time, went to college there, I should say. And good for him. Everyone won that trade.
Yeah, 100%. 1,000% even.
So, yeah, we'll see if we get Risa in.
Cheers to you, Tony.
And there should be Duran, the little shit, who I know listens to this podcast. He won an opportunity to be on this podcast in 2017 and has yet to redeem that ticket. I don't know if you remember that night. We did a live show at Ryan's Honor. That's the same.
So much
Duran.
Fun! Hit us up, dude.
He's keeps little teasers. He knows some things, and he's giving out little teasers, and it's cute, and I like it.
Keep it to yourself.
It's fun.
Duran. Or come on the podcast.
No, don't keep it to
tea.
Yourself. Keep being cheeky online. We need more of it. I love it.
Sure. Yes. Everyone, keep posting. Save Twitter.
Keep posting.
Trey, how are we gonna? It's a big weekend. It's a big weekend to be in the position that we're in right now. We're coming up against Philly. It's not a great moment to come up against Philly, but maybe it's just the kick in the dick that we need to seize the rest of the season. How do you see this playing?
Well, they're playing tonight, so I guess we'll see. Shit, I didn't realize. Hey, they're coming off of two straight losses going into Nashville right now, and guess who their referee is for that game? The same ref we had in Columbus. Yes.
Boy, oh boy, they let him come back on the field.
So let's
Holy
get
shit.
Some red cards flowing, my boy Boyko. Mm-hmm. Ukraine strong, I say.
Yeah, don't forget the $5 we cash apped you last week that got us all those yellows on the field.
Update from the future: he indeed gave out cards, sweetie.
I don't know, man. Philly's one of the few teams that rarely changes year to year. You know, it's the same fucking diamond, the same fucking Alex Bedoya, the same fucking two strikers that shit on everyone. And yeah, luckily, is Jamaica still? No, I think Blake's gonna be back. Shit, man,
nuts.
You know, can probably point to their last two losses, you know, almost entirely on the best goalkeeper in the last decade for MLS not being on the field, but I think he'll be there when we play them. So, look, unlike... who sings that song, High Hopes? Or I should just say, unlike Pete Buttigieg.
That's Panic at the Disco.
Oh, boo. I should say, unlike Pete Buttigieg and Panic at the Disco, I do not have high hopes for the living right now. Look, it sucks.
Do you have a... I think reasonably.
I think that's
very reasonably. I think we should be preparing for disappointment here. But do you have a scoreline?
Yeah, we're going to lose 2-1.
That's nice. I would have said 2-0, me personally.
I almost did.
I think this is the last... I think we snap the draw streak here, and that's and then we finally rubber band out. But we got to get through this weekend to do
Just
it.
Just got
to
rip the bandit off this weekend. If we can... Look, I was shocked.
100%.
I was shocked by how well we played Columbus, and that was a good Columbus team. Like, we can beat Philly if we can hunker down and, like, play well like we did against Columbus. But I don't know if we can do it for 90 minutes. That's the problem.
I agree with you.
We'll see.
It's hard. It's 90 straight minutes, too, right? Because all it takes is a couple. Yeah. I think that we've been exploited too often in the small moments, and then that's what saps the energy.
Yeah,
so we'll see if it happens.
The cavalry is coming.
So we hope. Where do you tweet at, Trey?
Trey Fillmore. What about you?
At Jake Beckard, and you can find us both at Blue Balls Pod. Hit the link tree in the bio if you want to know where to get other stuff like the merch that you see everybody rocking this summer. Or else if you just want to drop a tip in the tip jar, just cash app us at Blue Balls NYCFC. We are so easy to find. Thank you so much for listening to yet another week.
We'll be back next week. And for sticking with us
while we took the bye week. We will catch you on the other side of this weekend. Thanks. Great. Bye.
Bye.